This is Protect What Matters with Barry Fisher and Susan Blaze, giving you the advice and information on protecting what matters the most in today's world. Phone lines open, 238-5775, 238-KPRL.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Protecting What Matters. I'm Barry Fisher.
And I'm Susan Blaze.
PWM, Protecting What Matters, is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore our history, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. Today's show will focus on fire protection, protecting our food supply, and the rich ranching heritage of the Central Coast. Here in studio are Anthony Stornetta and Seth Scribner of the San Luis Obispo Cattlemen's Association. Welcome, gentlemen. And again, as always, the call-in with questions and comments, 805-238-5775. That's 238-KPRL. So, Susan, I know that I woke up in the middle of the night the other day thinking, you know, I knew cattle were not indigenous to this continent. So we did a little research on where cattle came from and how they came to the United States, and Susan's got that data.
Yes, it was quite interesting. This whole group of scientists and researchers, geneticists actually, studied the bones and remains of domestic cattle from a site in Iran, and they discovered that modern cattle actually descend from a single herd of wild ox from over 10,000 years ago. Domestic cows in those days weren't extremely common because most of the societies were mobile. They kept moving and didn't stay in one place so that they could raise cattle. But the first two types of domestic cattle there were are called the humped zebu, which you guys ever heard of that one, and the humpless European highland cattle. They were first domesticated to serve as a food source, but around 4000 BC, the ancient British and northern European farmers began milking cattle. And there are numerous depictions in the old Sumerian carvings and so forth of milking cows and then making cheese and butter, which is kind of interesting. And in ancient Egypt, cows were deified and worshipped. There was even a cow goddess named Hathor who personified the principles of motherhood, feminine love, and joy, although most of us females don't like being referred to as a cow these days, but I guess in those days it was okay. And in India to this day, cows are still considered sacred, and they're running all around on the streets. So
there you go.
Life is different here in the
Central
Coast.
That's probably more than you wanted to know about the ancestors of the bovines who are running around on your land. Anyway, let me introduce today's guest. Anthony Stornetta is a fourth-generation beef producer on the Central Coast. His grandfather and great-grandfather immigrated to the U.S. from Switzerland in the early 1900s. Both of them milked cows out of the round barn on Lower Higuera until they were able to purchase their own dairies. Anthony, his wife Denise, who is a fifth-generation farmer from the San Joaquin Valley, and their daughter Chiara run cow-calf operations in San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, and Monterey counties. Anthony's job during the week, his day job, is a deputy fire chief with a department south of San Luis Obispo County, not to be confused, of course, with his brother Jonathan, who is the fire chief of the city of Paso Robles. And we'll hopefully have him on one of these days to talk about fire safety zones. So if you're listening, Jonathan, expect our call. Anyway, Seth Scribner is a multi-generational rancher who operates largely on leased lands in and around San Luis Obispo County. Seth wears many hats and as a grazing manager plays an important role in shaping the open spaces we see around San Luis Obispo County. Alongside his wife Wendy, born and raised on a cattle operation in Cambria, and their two boys, Channing and Traven, Seth strives to raise top quality commercial cattle here on the Central Coast. Additionally, as a licensed civil engineer, he tends to rely heavily on new technologies in his operation. So, welcome both of you. So let's start with the first question here. You know, I never really realized that there's a really close connection between cattle ranching and wildfire prevention. Can you unpack this for us and give us a little bit on that?
Sure, I guess I'll take the mic first on this one.
There you go. Thanks, Anthony.
So there's a lot of things that overlap when you look at wildfire prevention and grazing. The cattle or any type of ruminant animal, they actually prevent fuel spread or and reduce fuel reduction and fire spread by, you know, eliminating the ladder fuels. So the grasses that go to the brush, that go to the trees and the timber, if you can eliminate those ground fuels, it helps in sustaining the fires and also mitigating and extinguishing the fires if you keep it out of the crowns and things like that. So grazing around areas, and especially in San Luis Obispo County here, is there's a lot of urban mix, wildland urban interface is what we call it. So with those open lands and grazing, you can really mitigate fire extension and spread around a lot of these small communities by having some good grazing management plans.
So is it, I mean, is the state or the local authorities, are they open to having this happening to keep the fires down? I'm sorry. Or do you get resistance to this?
I think for the most part, since it's such an intermix, that there's a lot of privately owned land. And if you look across California, there's over 30 million acres that are privately owned by ranchers and farmers. So grazing around these areas, it's very beneficial. There are some local trails and some other areas owned by Land Conservancy that are also grazed, and they have grazing management plans. So that's a good thing as well. If you're out hiking, biking, and living in that area, they're doing a great job managing their lands as well. So I think there's good collaboration with those other agencies as well.
And what are prescribed burn associations and range improvement associations? What are those all about?
Yeah, so PBAs and RAs. So if you look at a range improvement association, it's made up of ranchers and farmers who want to do prescribed fire on their own lands. And if you look in history, San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara County are some of the longest existing range improvement associations since the early 50s. And now with all the new legislation, and there was a bill passed in 2018, it was signed by Hannibal Jackson, but the California Cattlemen's did a lot of walk in the halls of Sacramento, a lot of bipartisan support. And that Senate Bill 1260, it falls on the heels of some pretty devastating wildfires. In 2018, there was 2 million acres burned, but not to be compared to 2020 and 21, which one fire in each of those years. The August fire in 2021 burned a million acres, over a million. And then in 2021 was the Dixie fire, a million acres. So it falls on the back of Senate Bill 1260, which really started highlighting how beneficial prescribed fire is and how to get it moving forward. There was a lot of legislation that came out of that, and it's been happening. There's some legislation happening this year, and it's been a multi-year thing for prescribed fire.
So how do you anticipate all this rain that we've had this year? How do you think that's going to change the makeup of what you're doing this year and in upcoming years? Is it going to change the way you do things?
I think there's going to be a pretty good grass crop. It all depends. You know, it all takes a start. So in the last couple of years, I think we've been lucky, or actually just last year, we were lucky there wasn't a whole lot of acres burned. But as you drive along the highways, there wasn't a whole lot of grass. So that potential wasn't. I think this year there's a lot of potential. But I think with some good grazing management along those areas, which there is, I think we can prevent some of that. But again, it still takes caution when you're out in those areas and working in those areas.
This is somewhat out of left field, but do many of the people who raise cattle, do you grow hay as well? Do you grow your own hay?
I think there's a mix. There's some people out there that do and some that don't. But again, going back to the grazing is you could really create some real good defensible breaks by some good fuel management, either done by the PBAs or range improvement associations by doing prescribed fire. And I know we'll get here in a minute, but I think you guys asked a question about collaboration with local agencies. And CAL FIRE is a great supporter of the Range Improvement Association. There's been a lot of burns down in Creston and across the county, for that matter, working with the Range Improvement Association. A lot of support out there.
And so when in a prescribed burn, are you burning some of the brush and those things that would normally create fires that spread? Is that what you're burning?
Yeah, you're reducing the fuel load is what you're doing. Reducing those fuel loads and those ladder fuels, like I mentioned. So you're, I don't want to say total conversion, but you might be getting rid of invasive species in the area, or invasive plants, I'm sorry. And then also that fuel loading, because so long California eliminated burning. And then during that time, we have some of these decadent fuel loading that's, you know, probably 50, 100 years old if a fire hadn't moved through there. So they're just sitting there waiting.
Do you get a lot of resistance from some of the environmental groups about doing these burns?
There is a little bit, but I think it's more about education and outreach. And to kind of give a plug for the Fire Safe Council here locally, they have obtained a lot of grant funding.
Yes.
And done a lot of that. So there's a lot of support. I would say on state lands and local lands, I think it's pretty positive and it's been working very well. When you start getting into the federal lands, a lot of these special groups, special interest groups, kind of halt a lot of things that happen. So I know the federal process is pretty slow as it is, but once you put these special interest groups on top of it, doing any type of forest health or mitigation, things like that, that really slows it down. So there hasn't been much progress on that end.
It does seem like a huge educational issue because people don't seem to understand. I've always felt this way, that the farmers and the ranchers care about the land so much that you are the best stewards there could possibly be. Your entire livelihood, your whole culture depends on it. And so it's just these folks who think they're protecting the environment by not taking out the brush just don't understand, right?
That's correct. And if you look at a wildfire, when you're burning 1 million acres, the atmosphere can't absorb any of that. And it has to sit somewhere. So there's a lot of impact to the community. When the education outreach piece we need to do is we're letting small amounts of smoke in the air. The atmosphere is capturing it. There's not a lot of impact. So that's the education we need to give is let's do it on a small scale and actually prevent something.
Absolutely.
It makes perfect sense.
All right, everybody. Well, thanks so much. And we'll be back talking about livestock health and sustainability after the break. Thanks for being with us, folks.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care, all your vehicle needs, everything you want.
Fox News, I'm Matt Napolitano. Alec Murdaugh's former law partner, Ronnie Crosby, among the rebuttal witnesses testifying in Murdaugh's double murder trial.
I thought I knew who Alec was. I did not.
The exchange came after the defense rested. The judge will let the jury visit the scene of the murders once rebuttal witnesses are done.
Fox's Gernal Scott. Former White House Chief Medical Advisor Dr. Anthony Fauci denying the latest suggestions regarding the origin of COVID-19.
I don't see any data for a lab leak.
Dr. Fauci with the Boston Globe, the Department of Energy assessing with low confidence a report the pandemic began with a lab leak in China. The EPA is opening an office near the site of that toxic train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio, where residents can sign up for air monitoring inside their homes, as well as cleaning services. America's listening to Fox News.
Are you ready to move your interior wish list to the done list? Knight's Carpets and Interiors has you covered with savings. Save on European oak hardwood floors at an unbelievable $6.95 per square foot. Save with window treatment rebates. Save with window treatment tax credits. For a free estimate, call 237-1400. Visit Knight's Carpets and Interiors, 3320 Ramada Drive, or go to knightscarpets.com.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Seth Scribner and Anthony Stornetta from the San Luis Obispo County Cattlemen's Association. The KPRL call-in number is 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So, Seth, let's start with you this time. We'll give you a shot at the whack at the pinata here. Keeping your livestock in good health is a big part of what you do every day. And you're really involved with the state-of-the-art technologies these days. So let's start with genome sequencing. How does that fit into the picture?
All right. So we're in the animal husbandry field, which means we care passionately about these animals. It could be the cow out in the pasture, the horse in the pasture, our stock dogs. We use genome sequencing a lot on our cow and bull selection. So naturally, the new calves born are going to be half their cow DNA and half the bull DNA. And then we can use genome sequencing to further refine that. Is that animal going to be calving ease, maybe easier genetics on heifers? Or is it going to have high marbling, which might yield to taste later down the road? And what we've come up with is genetically enhanced EPDs, expected progeny difference. And they've really become one of the main tools we use in selection. And a lot of us in the cow-calf industry, we will keep the same females for most of their lives. And the new genetic component that comes in year after year is going to be our new bulls. And we'll select those new bulls a lot using genetically enhanced EPDs.
Is most of this being done artificially, artificial insemination, or you let them go?
Different producers. A lot of producers might breed more of their heifers through artificial insemination, but with the cow herds themselves, it gets a little trickier since those cows have baby calves on their side, mm-hmm. and a lot more of that might be done with natural service using bulls.
We actually have a business partner who was in the bull semen business, and he had some amazing stories about that. So, but we won't
Which
go down that road.
No. So, what you said, Seth, raised a question for me. You said you keep the cows for their whole life. How long do they live in? How many years can they have babies if they're healthy and strong?
A lot of cows will stay in the herd, maybe up to 10, 11, 12 years old. You know, there's each year there'll be a percentage of females that fall out and maybe didn't raise a calf, and those will leave the operation. But if she's a good producing female, you want her there as long as possible.
Great.
We've heard a lot about the overuse of antibiotics in livestock. What do you do to prevent this?
So with antibiotics, you know, we have young kids, and obviously when they aren't feeling well, it kind of hurts your heart a little bit, and you're trying to do everything to make that child feel better. It's the same with these animals as we have them out on the operations. Is as much as we talk about antibiotics and they come up maybe in the news cycles, it's very tough to ignore an animal that might be sick. And so we're out there, and there's a number of things in play that help us administer antibiotics.
Great.
Are we here?
We have a call. Yeah. Welcome to Protecting What Matters. What's your question today?
Well, thank you very much. You may have already talked about this, but are we having a Cattlemen's Western Art Show this year? And if not, when are we having them again?
We're not going to have one this year. I don't believe we're going to have them going forward. Just there's a couple things that have maybe come into play. During COVID times, it got difficult to try and have the Western Cattlemen's Art Show. So there was a number of years there where we didn't have it, and then we also faced some challenges with maybe Western art not being quite as popular as it once was, and the momentum of the Western Art Show has deteriorated some.
Momentum. Well, anyway, we have Yellowstone on TV now, so that, I think, will make all that stuff more popular.
Well, it sounds to me like you're volunteering to run this.
Run it. I'm volunteering to come and eat or whatever, tri-tip or whatever they have.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your call. Take care.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Anyway, continue on the antibiotic thing. We didn't mean to interrupt, but that's what happens in live radio. You know, you have
to
take the calls.
We're supposed to get calls. We want to get calls.
Oh, yes. Exactly. No, jumping back to antibiotics. So for a number of years, all antibiotics sold in California have had to been under prescription through your veterinarian. And that just moved nationally, so producers all over the country can only administer antibiotics through the use of a prescription, which has really promoted and fostered the development of a veterinary-client relationship. And so you're in constant consultation with your veterinarian and getting feedback from them to help administer these antibiotics. Also coupled with the fact that there's a few antibiotics that are maybe more commonly used in humans than they are in livestock. And if we try to avoid those classes of antibiotics.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Because those are the ones that then can create reactions
right.
in people, right?
We
become resistant to the antibiotics that we take in through
Correct.
Our food. Right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So this was interesting. There was a February 3rd article on Fox Digital. I think I sent it to you guys, but I mentioned it when we talked last week. Regarding a concern that ranchers along our porous southern border have a concern that we're going to get foot and mouth disease immigrating into the country. Is that something that you guys have? I know your national association's on it because the guy who runs it, they had a clip on the Fox Digital. But is this something you're concerned about? That's a big deal, isn't it? If it gets
most definitely, and I think biosecurity in general is a big deal. Foot and mouth is one element, and a large portion of our cattle market is comprised of our export market, and so that helps with the prices we see here in the United States. And if we have any kind of biosecurity breach here in the United States, it would be detrimental to the cattle markets. Probably the first and foremost thing that's being done along those lines, and as they might have mentioned from the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, is implementing a nationwide traceability system.
Right.
And we're dabbling in that, and we have been for a number of years. Most of these animals wear an electronic identification tag to where we can scan them, look them up in a database, maybe find their ranch of origin, find their age. And the idea with the traceability system is we can then go back and trace the contact that each of those animals might have had before they were exposed or even after exposure, and help control should a disease outbreak occur.
Wow.
So you must have some pretty sophisticated databases that you work with?
The databases are mostly held by the, we call them EIDs, electric identification tags. They're kind of a low frequency type tag that resides in their ears. And most of the companies that furnish those tags are the ones that hold the database.
Right.
Plus there's some other marketing programs that we might sign up for that would, for source and age verifications, and a lot of that database is not necessarily held in the producer's hands.
Right. Okay.
The challenge with it becomes, though, is, you know, on the ranch level, it's easy to know that animal, know where it came from, and then it might go on to a sales yard. Now it commingles or interacts with quite a few other animals. Maybe it's purchased as part of its small group, is then joined into a bigger group. Maybe they go to a feedlot in the Midwest, and that pen's then joined in with another one, and so you can start seeing all the different contact points that animal might have between birth and harvest.
Right. Well, most of the cattle you're raising, leave and go to these other staging areas too, don't they? We're not doing a lot of processing here anymore, are you?
No. Most cattle nationally kind of gravitate to the Midwest, and the easiest way to understand that one is, you know, a good conversion might be 5 to 6 pounds of corn ration to make 1 pound of beef. So it's much easier to ship the beef to the corn than it is the corn to the beef.
That
makes sense.
And that's why you see a lot of the feeding sector concentrated in the Midwest.
Wow.
That's a very interesting fact that I would never have thought of. Beef quality assurance, which is called BQA, is a big focus for ranchers across the country. Can you give us an idea of how this works and how it fits into your operation?
Yeah, so beef quality assurance, you know, all of us out there are striving to do the best possible job we can, and it has become a third-party audit system that helps identify the best management practices used on the ranch. It might be from a production side, from a vaccine administration site, to trucking, dehorning practices, whatever it might be, and it helps give others that are downstream in the harvest cycle assurance that that animal was raised to the highest standard or the best management practices were used on that animal to get it to that point in the food chain.
So that leads me to a question. This is not in our outline, but you know, I drive down the 101 and I see that herd of longhorns on somebody's property. So I mean, and I don't mean to say anything negative, but is that just for show, or is there a reason? I mean, that looks like they could hurt each other with those things.
That's a breed characteristic, you know, that obviously most people have always heard of the Texas Longhorns, and I'm familiar with that herd as well. A lot of us drive by it daily. And a few of them might not look all that good, but those animals are there to live their lives out. So most of them are very aged animals, and they're slowly kind of peacefully living out their life, and they might not look the same as they did when they were in their prime.
I mean, they're beautiful. I mean, when you look at them, but it's like you have to wonder if they could hurt themselves with them. If they're kind of aging out, then I guess they're not that active anymore.
No, and then when it comes to more of the traditional beef cycle and the commercial beef side of things, horns aren't very desirable, because when those animals are getting on the trucks, maybe going to harvest, one animal put a horn into the other one can bruise it fairly easily. So we actually discourage horns in a lot of regards on the animals going into the food supply.
Right. Okay, well, let's move on to the next topic, which is sustainability. And this is, of course, a huge focus of the wine industry here in the Central Coast, but it plays a huge part in your activities of raising livestock. So what are the major components of these efforts, and what are the local ranchers doing to address all these issues?
So in sustainability, we kind of look at livestock operations as a viable way to preserve lands as open space. You know, if it's in pasture and you drive down the road, it's going to be open space. And it's also still economically contributing to the tax roll. You know, we have those animals there. We're a business. we pay taxes on both income and property taxes. And we see a lot of conversion to land, maybe to government agencies or even some nonprofits that then fail to contribute any more economically. And I think that's going to become more and more of an issue as we move forward.
That happened to the Hartzell property, the last piece of the Hartzell property, didn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. The Land Conservancy, I guess it's called, right?
I'm not familiar with that particular one.
Yeah. Okay.
That's interesting. So then they become a nonprofit, and then they don't pay taxes anymore. Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's, yeah.
And, oh, go ahead.
Maybe I'll just say one thing is, you know, earlier I mentioned the 30 million acres of privately owned ground, but if you look at the carbon sequestration and what those private acres do around San Luis County, so those 30 million acres capture 198 million carbon sequestration for CO2. That's what they convert annually on an annual basis. So you think of what the open land does. That's one thing it does. It does a lot of basin recharge. All our biodiversity occurs out there. All our plant species are out there. So if you look at where all the water goes for basin recharge, it hits the concrete and the pavement. It goes straight to the ocean. These are those areas that capture that basin recharge and let it actually soak into the ground, which we're losing a lot of that these days.
Yeah. So that open space plays a critical role in maintaining our whole environment, doesn't it?
Yeah, so I can see why they don't pay taxes. They're nonprofits and they're setting these things up. Okay, well, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. What about environmental footprint? What do you mean by that, Seth?
So environmental footprint, most of these ranches have been passed down generationally, and it's taken 100 years of decision-making to maybe see that pristine landscape that we see today. And we treat the landscape as a renewable resource, so we're not in it for the short-term benefit. We're there year after year making sure that that resource can go on and continue to grow feed and be there not only for us but for our kids and their kids.
Okay, well, when we return, thank you. This is great information. When we return, we're going to continue and talk about carbon sequestration, which I've learned more about in the last week than I ever thought I would. So you hang on. We'll be back in a couple minutes.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Charles Payne, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Stocks losing steam in the final hour of trading and closing lower, with the major averages ending the month in the red. Stocks charged higher to kick off the new year, but the gains unraveled as hotter-than-expected economic data made investors reassess their expectations of the Fed's monetary policy. And Target said slower sales growth and rising operating costs hurt its profit in the most recent quarter. However, shares of Target rose nearly 2% as quarterly sales and earnings came in higher than analysts had forecast. And Goldman Sachs, one of the Dow's biggest losers, its CEO said it was considering strategic alternatives for its struggling consumer platforms business. The Dow winners, Boeing, Home Depot, and American Express. The Dow decliners, Amgen, United Health Group, and Goldman Sachs. The Dow falling 232 points, the Nasdaq down 11, S&P 500 down 12. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
Inflation is nothing more than legalized theft. Hi, I'm Dr. Ron Paul, and to preserve your wealth, I highly recommend keeping physical gold in your retirement account. To learn more, text the word SHELTER to 989898 to get a free info kit on gold IRAs from Birch Gold, which is the only gold IRA company I trust. So text SHELTER to 989898 to request your free info kit right now.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Dove's Paso Soul Food Grill is now open at 14th and Park in Paso Robles. Fresh and flavorful, their food is prepared daily using only the best quality ingredients. Fresh fried chicken made to order from scratch, crab and crawfish bags, and their best-seller catfish. Dove's Paso Soul Food Grill. Everything tastes like a home-cooked meal. Fried green tomatoes, hush puppies, black-eyed peas, cornbread, collard greens, red beans and rice, mac and cheese. It's all authentic home-style food that's good for your soul. Enjoy classic R&B hits on their sound system while dining indoors or out. You can also order online for pickup or relax at home and get great soul food delivered right to your door. See their menu at PasoGrill.com. Family owned and operated, they love locals because they are local. Dove's Paso Soul Food Grill. Look for the big Paso Grill sign at 14th and Park.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. The KPRL call-in line is 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. We're here with a couple of great cattlemen, Seth and Anthony, talking about the things that are impacting their industry. And we're going to jump into a very, what I found to be actually a fascinating topic area called carbon sequestration. And I mean, it's becoming a big boom industry, really. A lot of investment going into this in various different ways. So, Anthony, what do you say about this here?
Yeah, before we jump into carbon sequestration, I want to kind of get some facts out there so people really understand what we're talking about. So let's just take California, for example, and California emissions and really break that down. So in California, only 2% of all emissions are from beef production. And the reason it's so low is because a lot of our cattle are in open grazing. They're not in high-density feedlots like the Midwest. So 2% there. 8% is the total ag for California, so not a whole lot. 41% is from transportation, 23% is from industry, and 19% from electrical power.
Kind of one thing that always makes me chuckle a little bit when it comes to emissions is the way I think about it. I would feel very comfortable locking myself in the garage with all my cows overnight and sleeping with them, but I probably wouldn't want to do the same thing with my car running in that same garage overnight. Well,
I think you missed a category, Anthony. I think there was probably a category of hot air coming out of Sacramento, too, right?
Yeah, a lot of that.
That's the biggest polluter of all.
Yeah.
And here's something that's out there, too. So if everyone in the everyone went vegan and we got rid of all the cows, for the United States, that would reduce us by 2.6% emission from beef cattle. If you look at that globally, it's only 0.36%. So when everyone starts complaining about, you know, the farting cows and everything like that, it's not as much of an impact as they really say it is.
Yeah.
Gee, that's a surprise. So I thought they always told us the truth.
So tell us how the sequestration works, because I think it is a fascinating thing that's happening technologically, really.
Yeah. Just reverting back a little bit, 198 million tons are sequestered by open range right now in California annually. How that works is that carbon dioxide, it hits these open areas and it hits that grass. That carbon dioxide is sucked down in the plant, and some of these plant roots are up to 6 feet tall or 6 feet in depth, depending on what the species is. It sucks all that in, and then it extracts oxygen. So a lot of the open range, that's what we want, to sequester that.
What about all these grapevines that are out there? They're obviously doing the same thing, I'm thinking, huh?
Yeah, you know, I haven't studied the wine industry that much and the grapes, so I'm not sure, you know, what that percentage is, but I'm sure it has some type of impact. It's still the open land, and it's not high density, so I'm sure there's absolutely some positive impacts.
So I guess the point you want to get across here really is you know, really, the cattle industry is amazingly low impact on the environment when it comes right down to it. There's a give and take to it. That occurs, a natural give and take.
Yeah, and it gets right back to that whole thing with about the retention of water. The higher the forage, there's more green grass out there, it sequesters more carbon. It's those three primary things right there. There's some mulching studies going on right now you could read about. There's a lot of stuff happening in Marin County. They've done a lot of studies with UC Berkeley. There's a ranch just south of us in Santa Barbara County, the Chamberlain Ranch, who's done some mulching down there. And they've noticed the CO2 capture has been a lot higher with some of these mulching examples. But again, the open space, we go back to, you know, when we opened with Seth here talking about open space, it goes back to that. And, you know, some people might get mad they see cattle on the open range, but it's doing a lot more good than it is any negative impacts.
Well, and again, we talked about this back on February 25th. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal about some company that's found this stuff called biochar, that they're mixing into the ground with all this waste material. And it's apparently a very ancient farming practice that this company, and they're doing this in Santa Rosa. And then there was another article I found just this morning on this topic that they're, oh gosh, I can't find it in the stack here real quickly, but it had to do with using microbes with plants that actually help, you know, aerate the ground and bring the moisture in. So, and they're naturally occurring microbes. So they're coming up with some very interesting aspects of this whole area. Let's move on because I know we got to get moving here through this. It's a fascinating topic. But, okay, so like most business owners, ranchers are facing a number of economic and regulatory headwinds. Let's talk about some of those and how you're coping with these challenges. Is this a Seth or a
I'll take this one.
Okay.
Probably one of the biggest economic challenges we're facing here in California is labor. And a lot of that comes down to three, 4 years ago, California, we started recognizing overtime in the agriculture industry, and that hadn't been done before. Depending on your size of an employer, we've slowly stepped down through a few different tiers. And now for employers over 25 people, anything over 40 hours a week is now due overtime. And then if you were under 25 employees, you're kind of stepping through that phase right now. So that coupled with the fact that California has upped its minimum wage a number of times over the last few years has really seen a large increase to our overall labor portion of the budget.
Which, of course, adds to the inflation aspect of things that we're suffering right now.
It does. And then finding those individuals is even tougher than what we might have to pay them. We're seeing at this point, whether it's a sociological deal, but there's not as many young people wanting to go out and put in a day's work, especially if it's physical labor like you would see on a farm and a ranch.
Yeah. Yeah. We've had quite a few illegal immigrants come over the borders in the last 2 years. Are we seeing those people migrating up here to do this kind of work, or are they going to other areas of the country right now?
I haven't seen it much on the livestock side of things. You know, I know some labor contractors more on the farming side might be able to utilize that type of help, but the standards I know we're held to with our I-9 reporting and everything else, that population doesn't necessarily help us out on the ranch.
Got it. What about higher interest rates? Is that causing some issues for some of the farmers, ranchers out here?
Yes, for sure. A lot of operations, you know, when you think of most agricultural cycles, we have a big payday once a year. You sell the calves in the spring, and then you operate on those funds throughout the rest of the 11 months of the year. And part of that dynamic is maybe have an operating loan to help you cover the times of the year where you don't necessarily have revenue coming in. And an increase in interest rate definitely has a big impact on your bottom line.
So how much pricing power does the cattle industry have? You know, by that I mean, you know, are you able to pass those costs on, I mean, to the consumer or the next step? I mean, obviously it's all working its way through the system and ending up looking like inflation to the people who are buying something at Costco or something like or Spencer's or whatever it is. But I mean, do you have the pricing power at your area, at your level to offset those costs?
As a producer here in San Luis Obispo County, we're price takers. So we don't necessarily get to pass that cost along. As a whole, looking a little bit bigger, the supply-demand economics that reside in the beef cattle, it's very cyclical, about every 10 years. And we're transitioning right now from kind of an oversupply state back into a little bit more normal territory. And so we'll see some leverage come back down that supply chain. And most of it's sitting on the retail level right now, but leverage will move back into the feeding sector and hopefully down onto the producer.
Now, what about the water issue? And especially, I can't remember exactly the name of it, but, you know, the Board of Supervisors just rescinded something that they passed where, you know, the local farmers or ranchers could use, 25-acre feet for their own purposes. Has this impacted the ranch community here, that they've rescinded this, rule that they put in?
The rule was just there for a very short time, and I don't even think it had taken effect. There's quite a few issues that exist, you know, and it's specific to the Paso Robles groundwater basin. And everyone's trying to put forward a good solution to some of the years and years of drought we've had coupled with it. And through SGMA, we have, you know, state looking at groundwater sustainability throughout the basin. And I don't know if I've necessarily heard a great idea yet to solve all of it. There's a lot of little micro problems and that all contribute to the overall thing. And that planting ordinance you're referring to was right. One that was helped trying to rectify some farmers that had maybe been left out early on in the process when they were maybe not farming already when the back in 2013 when we started the drought.
And one last question on this overall topic, and then I'm going to turn it over to Susan. So obviously our state legislature has been pretty hostile to agriculture in this state. I mean, I think they pretty much run the poultry business out and the pork industry. So, I mean, are they a little more sympathetic to the cattle industry, or are you guys under a lot of pressure at this point and having those kinds of concerns?
I know for myself as a producer, we rely heavily on our trade organization, the California Cattlemen's. It's tough to do your job there on the ranch and be in tune with every piece of every Senate bill, every House bill that's going through our state assembly or our state legislation process. And we've got some great folks up there that can kind of keep us appraised of what's going on and maybe highlight where we need to get involved. But trying to keep track of them all yourself is pretty tough.
Okay, well, you know, we have a few more topics we're going to cover with Seth and Anthony, so stay tuned. We will be back for our final segment.
I don't know what to do.
About what?
My wife wants to remodel the kitchen, but we don't have that kind of money.
Want to see what we did? Take a peek at this.
Wow, that looks great. Who did your remodel?
It's not a remodel. I had Espeek Painting paint our cabinets. Now they're like new, and they're my wife's favorite color.
Espeek Painting, huh?
Yeah, they're local, right here in Atascadero. They're easy to deal with, from the estimate all the way to the final brush stroke. And getting a quote was easy. I did it online. It's way cheaper than a remodel.
Then I better take a peek at this Espeek Painting.
Well, you know what they say, happy wife? Happy life.
You got that right.
Take a peek at Espeek Painting and get a beautiful new look for your cabinets without an expensive remodel. Espeek specializes in cabinet painting as well as residential exteriors, interiors, and HOAs. Take a peek at Espeek Painting. Book a quote appointment quickly and easily 24/7 at espeekpainting.com. That's S-P-E-E-K painting.com.
Nick Madera, CPA in Atascadero. What is the ERC, the Employee Retention Credit?
My kind of take on it, in layman's terms, it's a thank you to business owners for keeping their employees on payroll during the pandemic. Basically, you're reclaiming payroll expenses for those employees you kept on during the pandemic, but there's rules you got to play by. There's two ways to qualify. One of them is you were directly affected by a government shutdown. So restaurants, retail, had to close their doors, automatic qualifier. The other way is you had to have a 50% drop in gross revenue, comparative from like 2020 through 2019, the same quarter, and then from 2021, between 2020 and 2019. So there's various ways you can calculate it to see if you meet that 50% threshold. That's how a lot of companies are doing this thing, so it's all based on payroll.
Make sure your business takes advantage of every deduction available. For more information on the Employee Retention Credit, the person to talk to is Nick Medeiros, CPA in Atascadero. Call 805-466-7249.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. The call-in number is 238-5775, 238-KPRL. We're here with Anthony and Seth from the Slo County Cattlemen's Association. And so what are the most pressing matters of local interest right now to the Central Coast ranchers?
Well, I'll just start off real quick with probably one of the biggest things on the forefront right now, and it's affecting all of us, is the AB 1103, which is the ag pass. It was actually in the state legislature's the livestock pass. The California Cattlemen's co-authored this bill in 2020, and it's hitting us now. And I have to thank CAL FIRE, the Ag Commissioner's Office, and then also some of the cattlemen members for helping support this. The Farm Bureau as well, recognizing Brent Burchett about supporting this and getting it going. So what this is during any type of wildfire, there's essential needs that both the fire agencies and public safety need. Some of those are access road identification, water supplies, the help of evacuation, and things like that. So what this AB 1103 does, it makes most of these landowners that are commercial producers take a four-hour course on fire safety training, and then they get a pass. So anytime there's a road closure, as long as it's safe to get in, they can go in there and remove livestock and also help public safety agencies. If you're not a commercial producer, it doesn't help you any. But for these larger parcels than 40 acres and you have a commercial producer, then you can get in there and start accessing. And so there's been a lot of collaboration on that front. And I think it's in place now, but I think it's really going to take fold and really take off this year.
So you're saying that before this, if you there was a fire, you could not necessarily get to your land and get your cattle off of there?
That's correct. It was very limited. And again, we would work, because of the relationships are so good with the local fire agencies and the sheriff's department, there was some, you know, latitude to do that. But now there's a lot more latitude if you have this card to get in.
I would hope so.
And it's a lot safer, too. People are actually getting some formulated training on wildfire safety.
That makes sense.
What about what's modified point of origin brand inspection? And you touched on traceability, but is there a connection there? Or what's that all about?
Two different things. So if a cattle producer in San Luis Obispo County, you've probably heard of it called the closed county, and it's kind of specific to producers, but we're one of two counties in the state that were required to do a special brand inspection before any of those cattle could leave San Luis Obispo County. So just about a year ago today, we held at our annual spring meeting and went through the state process to repeal repeal that law that took us from a modified point of origin county and made us the same as the rest of the state. And I believe Modoc County now is the only one that exists. So it freed up some of the constraints that we maybe had from earlier years on how we move cattle out of San Luis Obispo County. So it was a big ease or lesson of regulation for us.
Well, that's good. That's
yes.
Very good.
Yeah.
So what does the SLO County Cattlemen's Association need the most help with right now? And is there something that we as the public can do to help you?
So we'd encourage all the folks out there listening who are in the livestock beef world to become members of the local Cattlemen's Association and for that token, the State Cattlemen's Association, because collectively is what it takes for all of us to work on these issues together. Here locally, we rely a lot on community support. And in the fall, we put on our Cattlemen's Play Day, which is a great event to bring the kids out to. All the little kids, if they win their event, they get a buckle, and it's pretty neat to see the smile on their faces when the kid wins his first buckle and maybe the 6 and under dummy roping.
I'm coming.
Yes.
I'll be there.
You'll have to compete with the adults, but we'd love to have you there. And then we also facilitate a lot of those sponsorship dollars right back into the community. So we've donated funds to send Cal Poly students to National. We participate in the Quiz Jam by supporting that here at the Mid-State Fair. And we also send some dollars to Ag in the Classroom as one of the organizations just trying to get more engagement with youth in agriculture.
Great. Well, you guys, thank you so much for being here. We're to keep you here if somebody has a call. We've only got a couple more minutes in the show, but you know, we really support you guys and really appreciate all your hard work out there. It's really, really great.
Yeah, we thank you for everything you do. It's really great. And it's even more than I realized. It's amazing what you're involved in.
Yeah.
I'll just put one quick plug if we have time here.
Sure.
So looking forward to the next 2 years, Steve Arnold's not going to like this, but our local Steve Arnold's now the state president for the California Cattlemen's.
Ah.
So being the largest membership in the state, San Luis Obispo County, I think we have a great insight to what's going to be happening and big things on Steve Arnold's back.
Great. Well, I guess we'll have to bring him onto the show then.
Yeah.
I think that's a great idea.
Good. All right. Well, just real quickly before we end the show here, I wanted to bring a good news story. I think this is really great news. There's a new organization called the 1792 Exchange. And what they have done is they have identified 51 big businesses who target conservatives. And you should go to their website, just Google 1792 Exchange. And what they've done is they have some really serious criteria of how they look at what businesses do. And just let me run through this really carefully with you. They look to see if these businesses are canceling or deplatforming customers, suppliers, employees because of their viewpoints, whether they're using ideologically discriminatory charitable giving policies, failing to protect freedom of religious, political beliefs, and internal policies, funding ideological groups or causes with corporate funds, supporting think ESG, supporting ideological agendas with corporate brand reputation, and using political contributions for ideological purposes. So this is really terrific news for those of us who appreciate our freedoms, freedom of speech, freedom of association, and so on and so forth. And, you know, Andrew Breitbart, you know, who passed away a number of years ago, basically said, you know, conservatives have to win the culture back. So I encourage you to see the businesses that are spending stockholder money and your money to your detriment.
Right. And so it makes sense. So this is all part of what we've spoken of before is being focusing on local food producers and local merchants wherever we can, and to stop giving money to those people who are working against us actively. It makes perfect sense.
Right. Some of the banks that are the most egregious are like Citigroup, and I'm not going to go through the list. Go to the 1792 Project. It's really worth it. So remember, Anthony and Seth, thanks for being here. Remember, Blazing Bear Insurance Services is here to help you protect what matters most. With a strategic use of life, disability, long-term care insurance, and fixed annuities, along with business valuation. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters with Barry Fisher and Susan Blaze. Send your questions and show topic ideas to Barry at blazeandbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.
It's 2 o'clock.